Getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about how to rebuild trust after divorce. Now, I'm sure we've all heard newly divorced people say, I'll never trust my ex again, or maybe even worse, that they'll never trust another man or a woman again. And I don't think that's surprising, because divorce often means coming to an understanding that what you thought was true is not. It can be the land of shattered dreams where there's lies and mistruths are common. However, trust and trusting other people is the cornerstone of healthy relationships, and it's a vital part of being able to connect with others, whether that's in a role as a friend, a parent, an intimate partner, or a family member. So learning to trust again is very important. And joining us today to help us navigate and get some strategies around that is Terry Gaspard. Terry Gaspard is the co-author of Daughters of Divorce, Overcoming the Legacy of Your Parents' Breakup and to enjoy a happy, long-lasting relationship, which is due to be published in January. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning, Mandy. Great to be here.
Thank you. I thought that I'd start off by asking you if you could give us a general definition of what trust is. What does trust look like?
Trust is being able to put your faith in someone, to believe that they are trustworthy or that they're going to be dependable and you can count on them. And it doesn't just have to do with whether or not they're faithful or might betray you. It actually is a much broader concept that has a lot to do with actions such as, you know, returning phone calls, being dependable with doing what they say they're going to do. So many people think of mistrust in terms of betrayal, but it's actually a much broader concept. And also it's a skill that you can learn. It's not just losing it and never being able to repair it or regain it. I've seen people turn relationships around, both partners and parents and children who have broken trust. I've seen them repair trust wounds and work through these issues.
Well, that's great to know that we can repair trust. I just want to go back a little bit on the trust itself. I think I had read in one of the articles that you'd written which I really liked, was that trusting somebody is about believing that they have your best interests at heart. And I think,
yeah, that's so important.
It just gives a much broader definition that, yeah, I do think this person is looking out for me. And I do believe that when I talk about my problems with them or issues with them, that the answers that they're giving me are really about what they believe is best for me.
Yes, and as you said, divorce often intensifies trust issues. And because of feeling that the other person didn't have our best interest at heart, or they didn't care enough about the relationship to work on it, or in some cases, perhaps they were unfaithful to us, we may really need some time between relationships to learn to regain some confidence in our own judgment.
Right.
Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, we can have mistrustful thoughts that aren't even based on our partner's actions. They might even be coming from the past, from our parents' relationship or their divorce and or their divorce or other relationships that we've had, that we can sometimes have difficulty letting go. And that's not fair to someone that we meet that actually might be a good partner for us. They might be worth trusting, but we just are playing old messages.
So that leads me into my next question, and that was to talk about what mistrust looks like. And I think sometimes that's our own behavior, and it's like questioning what somebody does or blowing things out of proportion, creating a worst case scenario based on our past history.
Yes. Jumping to conclusions, which I think is human nature, especially if we've had, you know, people violate our trust in the past. We might see a text message or a card or something on a computer screen that we find, you know, suspicious or concerning. And rather than, you know, stop, take a deep breath, regain our thoughts and ask questions and try to gather information, we might jump to the conclusion that someone that we're dating or a partner of ours is, you know, doing something that is violating our trust and not even really giving them a chance to explain themselves.
Yeah, and another example I think about is where one partner says, I'm going for drinks after work with my coworkers, and maybe they're home later than they thought they were going to be, and then you become very suspicious about them, and you assume that means that they must be flirting with one of your coworkers and or developing a friendship with them that is going to threaten your own relationship. So then you start, you know, where have you been? Why were you there so long? How many drinks did you have? Who were you talking to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's that sort of style of almost interrogation rather than a conversation. I think of that as being an indicator of mistrust.
Exactly. That's definitely true. And so we have to really guard against that. But, you know, along with that, we want to be careful if we are a person who has experienced mistrust or betrayal and has trust issues, that we pick partners that are sensitive to that and can reassure us. Because you're right, we have to own our own behavior and, you know, just really try to have conversations about different situations that come up. But if our partner reacts in a defensive manner and gets easily upset, that can intensify our trust issues. So I often, when I'm working with couples, I often recommend that they have a dialogue about how to handle these conversations, and that the person who doesn't have the extreme trust issues has a more reassuring style and can be comfortable answering questions and even do things like text or phone call the person, letting them know that they're running late, checking in with them. Those things can be reassuring to a person that has trust issues.
Right. That's a good point, Terry, because I think sometimes, well, some of it is personal style too, and maybe actually get into the way that you attach to people. Like if you're very mm-hmm. independent, you might be resistant to, why do I need to text you and let you know what time I'm going to be coming home? You can trust me.
Exactly.
So I can see where that, you know, can cause a conflict within a relationship.
Certainly, and people need to be able to show their vulnerability, because that trust is, I believe you said something like trust being essential for a healthy, intimate relationship. And I agree with that, but also being able to be vulnerable with your partner. I know it took me a long time to admit to my husband, I've been remarried now for quite some time, that I did have trust issues. And it was based on my parents' divorce when I was very young, and then some things that happened in my first marriage, and being able to open up to him and to let him know that I might overreact to certain situations, like if I see him talking to someone, a female at a party, or ask someone to dance, when we're at a gathering, coming home late, that's a hot button issue for me. If he says he's going to be home around 5 and, you know, he doesn't come home or call me by 5:15 or 5:30. So I need to be able to share those feelings with my husband and let him know that I need reassurance, whereas I might be independent on many areas of my life. I tend to be actually sort of ultra self-reliant, you know, with work and friendship and finances and stuff, but when it comes to intimacy, I'm definitely struggling and working through the trust issues that I write about.
And I think what you're saying there then is like when you think about mistrust, it's really, if you're experiencing mistrust with somebody right now, it's really important to take a step back and to ask yourself whether that's because of the past or the present. Mm-hmm. And are you judging your current partner by events that have happened in your past?
That's so true. And in my book, for instance, I have a survey that readers can fill out to deal with their own experience of their parents' divorce. And just going through the survey questions and answering them has helped a lot of, I've interviewed hundreds of women, and it's helped them to identify that they did experience feelings of insecurity or mistrust as a result of one of their parents leaving very suddenly and maybe not being in touch on a regular basis, or multiple divorces also can trigger a lot of trust issues for especially women, but even some men, if they've seen their parents get married and or divorced more than once. I know that was true in my family. You have a sense of fragility about relationships. I know I believed for most of my life, Mandy, that relationships didn't last. And that's why I love the subtitle of our book about being able to enjoy a happy, long-lasting relationship, because I'm one of those daughters of divorce that has a hard time believing not only that my partner has my best interests at heart, but that our relationship is going to endure the test of time.
Right. I think that so... It's easy not to be conscious or aware of your past and how that's mm-hmm. affecting your present behavior. And I think one of the skills that you had talked about in terms of, you've identified six different ways to start rebuilding your trust in people, and you said, and I thought of that as being it's like going to the gym and starting to work out again. You have to get used to using different muscles. And the same with trust, building trust. You're going to have to start get used to using different techniques. The first one you talk about is being aware of your mistrustful thoughts and starting to challenge them. Can you give us an example of how that would work?
Well, I'll just give a basic example that I use in the book. This is a fictitious couple, and all the names in the book, you know, aren't real names. They're based on, you know, stories and composites. But a teacher whose name I referred to her as Kelly, overreacts when her husband gets a phone message from a colleague or a text message, automatically assumes that he might be having a conversation with someone, you know, because he's interested in them. She's experienced not only divorce in her own life, but her parents were both married and divorced twice. So she has a lot of trust issues. And she would frequently get very upset, leave the house, issue a lot of ultimatums, you know, that I can't stand this anymore. The relationship's not working for me. I don't trust you. And this was a pattern that had been going on in her relationship with her husband for many years. And she was able to stop herself dead in her mistrustful tracks, basically, and say, okay, I'm going to distract myself. I'm going to go take a little walk, have a cup of tea, maybe even call a friend if she was having, you know, a really tough time, to get a little bit of perspective on things, and then come back and be vulnerable and ask her husband, Mark, what was that about? Was it a work call? You know, it's triggering some trust issues in me. And just be vulnerable and ask for some reassurance instead of jumping right away to he's having some kind of inappropriate conversation or text message from this female.
Right. So just to be aware that you're jumping to this scenario that in all likelihood may not be completely untrue.
Exactly. And you're not even getting information from the other person. You're assuming the worst. For instance, when I was engaged to my husband, we were at a dance, and he went off and danced with someone else. And I remember thinking, he asked her to dance rather than me, and realized later, once I calmed down and went to the ladies' room and had my little mistrustful moment, he explained to me that this was someone that he knew from the community, and she had asked him to dance, and he really wasn't thinking that it was going to upset me. And he was shocked when I went off to the ladies' room and was so upset because he wasn't really... You know, it wasn't intentional.
It didn't even occur to him that it might upset you.
Exactly. So because, not all people are thinking, oh, that's how my partner's going to react. And not all breaches of trust are intentional. Sometimes they're just mistakes or misjudgments that people make, and maybe a little insensitivity mixed in, but it's not on purpose. And for those of us that have trust issues, we really need to challenge our thinking about that. Get information, read about trust. Counseling has really helped a lot of people, including myself, to work through those issues. So I don't have the same intensity of trust issues that I used to have, but I'm still fine-tuned to them in certain areas. And I think all of us as human beings need to be aware of certain situations in life that may be triggering our trust issues.
Right. So, Terry, you just mentioned another strategy for rebuilding trust, and that's making allowances for people and understanding that sometimes it can just be a simple, honest mistake. And
oh, true, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Maybe they didn't text you about being late or give you a call that they were running late because their phone had run out of battery, and that was true, and it was unintentional, and it's completely benign.
We would probably give a friend a break. You know, if they said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get your call, or I couldn't call you because my battery was dead. But if it's an intimate partner, some of us might be more readily jumping right to the mistrustful thoughts and not really listening to our partner's side of the story. You know, so we're really not giving them the opportunity to demonstrate trustworthiness, and we're automatically going by those old messages from former relationships. So we need to be able to look for red flags, certainly. I mean, if someone is repeatedly saying and doing things that are inconsistent, you know, if their behavior is not matching their words, they're not being reliable and dependable, then of course that's a red flag.
Well, I'm going to come on to talk about red flags in just a moment, but right now I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. My guest today is Terry Gaspard. Terry is a licensed therapist, college instructor, and author. Terry, you have a book coming out in January. Would you like to share that with our listeners?
Yes, this is a book, and it's stories of resilience of over 300 women that my daughter Tracy and I interviewed, and they've all experienced their parents' divorce at least once. And the title of the book is Daughters of Divorce, Overcome the Legacy of Your Parents' Breakup and Enjoy a Happy, Long-Lasting Relationship. And you can pre-order it on our website, movingpastdivorce.com. There are links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and many other booksellers. And it's specifically geared towards women who want to build love, trust, and intimacy in, you know, intimate relationships and work through some issues that they may have that are preventing them from really believing that they can have successful relationships that are long-lasting.
Well, I think that's a great... I'm really looking forward to seeing your book out published. I know that you've worked really hard on it and you've interviewed hundreds of women to pull together the information in your book. So congratulations on getting it published.
Thank you.
Before the break, you mentioned about red flags. And I think you may have touched on this, but what is the difference? I mean, how do you know when a behavior is a red flag and when it's an innocent mistake? What is the difference there?
Well, I think it's a pattern of behavior where, you know, you're feeling more insecure than what you typically would. Your instincts are telling you that the person is not really being honest and not being forthright. They're withholding information from you. You've tried many of the strategies that we've talked about today, Mandy. You've given them the benefit of the doubt. You know, you've gotten information from them about times when there have been inconsistencies between their words and their behavior. And it's just basically a pattern of behavior that's not honest, it's not reliable and consistent. And in those cases, sometimes you're better off really confronting the fact that the relationship may not be in your best interest. I think it takes a lot of courage to trust someone, but it also takes a tremendous amount of courage to end a relationship that's really not a good fit for you.
So you're saying really pay attention to the red flags early on in the relationship. So this could be, you know, after divorce, if somebody starts dating again, just to be present in the moment and be aware of observing, trying to use a neutral filter to observe the date's behavior before, and then to make an honest assessment as to whether there are red flags there and whether this is the relationship for you.
So true, because, you know, when you're coming out of a divorce, your self-confidence is down in many cases, and you need time to really rebuild yourself. And you don't want to, you don't want to go into a relationship where you're feeling uncertain about the other person's intentions when they've given you, you know, they haven't given you enough reason really to believe that they care about you in a significant, you know, in a deep way and that you're on the same page. Sometimes you can just date casually after a divorce. I believe in taking things very slow and really getting to know the person and seeing if they're the kind of person who would be a good match for you. And sometimes the tendency, I think, is to rebound and jump into a relationship too quickly. And those relationships often don't last. And
right.
The reason is trust. We have many trust issues after a divorce, and they can be triggered by someone who maybe just isn't ready to make that kind of commitment, or they want to date casually.
Right, right. And one of the other things I think we talked about with that, what mistrust looks like, and I think that you have to consider whether your mistrust, your reactions to the other party is having a destructive effect on the relationship.
Definitely. You know, because sometimes damage can happen, and even though you try to repair it, you know, after a while, if it keeps up, it just really affects your enjoyment of the other person's company. But giving yourself that time between relationships is really important, and not rushing into it, and making sure that that person does have your best interests at heart. And then if you feel that the red flags are coming up a lot, you know, just really taking the time to evaluate things and say, well, maybe your self-esteem is not to the point where you're ready to be in another relationship again so soon.
So what about when you're co-parenting with your ex? Because I think, you know, when you're co-parenting, it's healthy if you can have trust, but if your trust has been broken during the divorce, then how do you rebuild that afterwards? Because you have this ongoing relationship with them.
That's a really tough one. I would say, generally speaking, if you have a relationship with your ex where you can trust their behavior with the children, it would be a matter of always reminding yourself that you've got to extend trust to your ex when it comes to issues with the children, and primarily because it's in their best interest. That even though you may not be really comfortable with some of the things he or she says or does, and they may trigger some past issues that you have with them, do they consistently follow through with the children? Do they say they're going to do something and show up? Do they, you know, make sure that they are following through with their commitments? And if they are, primarily, you have to really, for your children, you have to try to be trusting. And if they're not, then I would recommend that you try to send an email. I wouldn't have a phone conversation with them, because sometimes that can trigger a lot of anger or past issues. And then sometimes couples that have more conflicts or they have unresolved issues, while they're co-parenting, they can really benefit from going to a mediator.
Right, right. I was thinking with as you were talking then, is saying, it's maybe it would be helpful to really start seeing your ex in a different capacity, like recognizing that your relationship isn't as intimate partners anymore. You are co-parents, and it's a completely different relationship, and you have to go. Let go of the past and what happened in the past that caused your relationship to end, and to start seeing that your interactions as co-parents are on a different level. And
exactly. If you're not going to be friendly in all cases, even with your ex, I just really always encourage people to be cordial, to be businesslike, and to always keep the focus on the children.
Right, right. But I do think, I mean, I think that it would be productive to work on rebuilding trust with your ex, because, you know, if you have young children, if they're like 5, 8 years old, you're going to be in that co-parenting close relationship with your ex until they're out of high school, and then even beyond that.
So true.
And that's,
it's not usually a short-term relationship. I stayed in touch with my ex for a couple of decades because my children were pretty young when I got a divorce. And I had to constantly work on that because I still had some issues that were unresolved, and I had to accept that and just really work on extending trust to him and think about, okay, this relationship ended for a reason. Not all relationships are meant to last. But the children are always going to be a part of both of our lives. And whenever I would feel upset or some of my trust issues were triggered by things he would say or do, I would remind myself, step back, keep the kids in the forefront. I don't want them to feel loyalty conflicts about who they love more, their dad or me. He's their parent. And try to be as forgiving as I can. I think forgiveness is really tied into everything we're talking about, too. Not accepting all kinds of behaviors or agreeing with them, but trying to let go of how their past behavior, our ex's past behavior, may have had certain influences on us or power over us. And just really, as you said, Mandy, redefine that relationship with your ex to be quite kind of businesslike, maybe not even friendly, but certainly cordial.
And one of the skills that you talked about as well is learning from your past betrayals and turning those into lessons about how even not to put yourself into that situation again. When I read about that, it reminded me when I was dating before I got married, I'd gone out to a party with my date. It was only like our second or third date. Well, he went off with somebody else and left me at this party. I had no ride home, and I was about 45 minutes away. And I was, you know, obviously I was really upset about that. And fortunately, a friend of his stepped in and gave me a ride home. But I take from that now, it's like, you know, I need to be responsible for making sure for my transportation. If I don't know somebody very well, I'm not going to put myself at risk of being betrayed and being left and not being able to, or being so vulnerable that I, you know, can't get home.
Good point. Yeah, we always have to use that good judgment, and sometimes the excitement of meeting someone new and being caught up in the moment, you know, our judgment can be a little cloudy at times. I know mine has been. And, you know, always be thinking, okay, what is it, what's a safe, reasonable way to deal with this? Because you can't trust everyone. I mean, I think what we're talking about is, for the most part, people are trustworthy, and we want to extend trust to people that show the ability to be a trusting person. But on the other hand, in new situations where you don't know someone, it is best to be somewhat reserved.
Right. We're not saying forget about past betrayals, wipe the slate clean. We're saying about, you know, look at them a little bit dispassionately and see what you can learn from those about what you need to do to protect yourself. But don't stop. They don't mean that you can't ever trust anybody again.
Exactly. I mean, that relationship, whatever the relationship was, the marriage or even a dating relationship, hopefully was a way for us to learn about what relationships do work for us. And if we can approach relationships as teachers and not see the end of the relationship as a failure, we're going to be so much better off. I know it took me a couple of years after my divorce to really work through those feelings of, I failed, I let my kids down. Especially in my case, because I was raised in a divorced family, I wanted so much for my marriage to work. And I realized that it wasn't a relationship that was going to be a happy, healthy one for either one of us, and we're going to be better people as a result of getting the divorce. But it does take time to have a less personal feeling about it, because even though there's not as much stigma about divorce now as there was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, I think for the most part, many people still see it as divorce as a failure. And we have to move out of that and see it as an opportunity or a catalyst for personal growth and change. And often second marriages and even third do work out to be happier relationships for us, because we have taken that opportunity to really see the lessons that were learned, the kind of people are a good fit for us. And some of its compatibility, you know, physical, mental, psychological compatibility, and realizing you can't change someone's basic nature.
Right.
You know, I know that was a hard one for me, because I tried very hard to do that with my first marriage and realized it wasn't working.
Right. And that, again, is that comes back to trust, too. It's like if you recognizing when the behavior you're seeing is, it's like you're not going to be able to change that. The other person has to want to change the behavior. So if you talk about the issue and, you know, again, that becomes a red flag. If it's a repeated behavior that doesn't change, then you really have to think long and hard about whether you can continue in that relationship or if there's another boundary you need to set.
Exactly.
So,
and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, divorce is painful. It's hard for children and for us as adults. But sometimes on the other end of it, we can come out as stronger, more capable people. And that's really why my daughter and I wrote the book, for us to transmit this message of resilience. If you can learn through your experience and you can really those lessons can really propel you to make different choices, that's the kind of life where you can have so much hope and so much really joy for every moment of your day.
And I love that message, Terry. We're coming up on the end of our time together. Do you have final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I would just say that trying to extend trust to a partner who shows you
signs of being worthy of your trust is a good thing. And being vulnerable and being able to look at your own past and your present and what you bring to relationships is really important. And, you know, learning to trust is a skill that can be nurtured over time. So give yourself the time. I believe with courage and persistence, you can turn hurts from past betrayals into lessons.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you so much. And I have a quote from a German writer, Walter Anderson. He wrote, "We're never so vulnerable than when we trust someone, but paradoxically, if we cannot trust, neither can we find love or joy." And that's why I'd like to encourage our listeners to not to stay in the place of mistrust and doubt, but to start developing trust again in others, because it is the cornerstone of a healthy relationship, and it's any healthy relationship with your kids, with your family members, as I said, even with work colleagues. And learning to trust is about rebuilding your judgment skills, and it's often more about you than others. Terry, I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce. I hope you'll join us again next time.